Grief is an uncomfortable friend. First, I want to say thank you to those who have been listening and have respected my time off away. I've been coaching some local college students and wrapping up my application for International Coaching Federation certification. So fingers crossed that by the end of January, I'll get to take the exam and hopefully move forward on that path. But I've also been able to kind of fit in a little bit more reading now, which I'm not quite sure how. I tend to pack myself in with a lot of activities, as you might be aware of if you've listened to my podcast before. I don't give myself a lot of space, even though that's the word of the year for me. So who knows? But I'm recording this today on November 1st with my thought of, you know, when I do have an idea or some thoughts I'd like to share, capturing it now and maybe kind of setting this up to play early next year so that I'm not as burdened by the thought of getting content out every week. A really lovely mom, another bereaved parent I've spoken with said, you know, release content as it feels true to you. And upon reading this book called The Body Keeps Score, I am just like a little bit into it, maybe a couple hours of listening into it. It's really started bringing up in me something that I feel like I haven't processed in a really long time. And I've made some realizations about it and I would like to share. So today's episode, I think, is going to be entitled The Lies We Tell Ourselves. The Body Keeps Score is a really interesting book around trauma and how the body is affected by trauma. And it's really sad. There's a quote in there that was just like, a lot of research ends up being me search, especially in psychology. People dive into aspects of themselves that they want to know more about and try to understand and see if there are any kind of links or summaries we can make about people's experiences. And I find myself oddly attracted to topics around trauma-informed leadership and trauma in general. And I'm assuming it's because of this loss, right? I don't think I was ever interested in trauma work or anything like that before Lincoln died. Now, I've had some experience, and not necessarily experience with it, but exposure to it when I did a couple of years of psychotherapy to help me process my father's passing. But I don't think I really understood trauma. That was like the first time I was even told that I had experienced trauma. And I remember telling my psychotherapist, I was just like, well, it's not like I was, you know, sexually assaulted, you know, like, so it couldn't have been as bad, you know? And she's just like, there's no worse thing. Like, trauma can be trauma regardless of what the action is or what has happened to you. And in reading the first couple of chapters of this book, I realized, oh my gosh, there's so many lies I've been telling to myself over the years around who I am, and ones I've shared with you, you know, on this podcast, telling you frequently about how, like, I take back everything I said in my 20s, right? And I wanted to offer a scenario that I spent some time thinking about a couple of Saturdays ago, really unpacking. And my husband looks over at me and I'm like crying on the couch and he's like, are you okay? And I guess I buried it down really deep and I never thought about this. So here goes. It was my, I think for sophomore year of, yeah, it was my sophomore year of college. And my parents were in the middle of separating, and they would frequently, my mom would frequently come pick me up from school. I lived about an hour and a half away. Like, campus was like an hour and a half, hour and 20 minutes away from my home. And my mom would come pick me up and bring me home for the weekend. And I think my dad offered to do it one day. And so he was getting close, or it was right around the time and he'd probably be there. So I left the dorm hall. And as I opened the door, I proceed to watch my dad like pull up to the curb and then like tap and like run into the bumper of the car in front of him. And that was my other friend's father's car. And I was like mortified. I was like, oh my gosh, like, how did he just do that? Like, he didn't stop. And, you know, we checked it out and everything was okay. And they didn't, you know, have any damage. They didn't ask for insurance or anything. But, you know, I was pretty upset. And I get into the car and my dad proceeds to just really upset me the entire drive home. I was driving because once I got in there, I could smell him and I realized he was drunk. And so, not surprised, my dad had had a couple of DUIs over the course of his life. And I mean, one DUI, like this is how bad it is, people. One DUI he got, he had just had a broken taillight and he got pulled over by the cops. And when he rolled down his window, they smelt it on him. And they were like, I forget what he blew, but like it was so high. And they were shocked at how well he was driving at that alcohol level because his body had just gotten so used to it. I mean, this man, I would not be exaggerating if I told you he could pound a 30 pack in a night. I don't even know how you drink that much liquid, let alone that much beer, but he could do that. Anyway, so he gets to school. I realize he's drunk. I berate him for the fact that he was driving drunk because I'm very upset about this. And he proceeds to talk in the car about all these awful things about my mother because he's very upset about this divorce. And I'm all for her leaving him. I felt like she should have done it a long time ago. And, you know, she was definitely afraid. She was afraid for her life, which I didn't understand then, but I understand now. And we had such an awful experience on the ride home, like just the verbal abuse I received from him about not only my mother, but then the words that he was calling me and the names he was calling me. People out here in the Northwest have never heard that kind of language. I mean, I'm talking about like sailor cursing, names that you would never expect. Like, I don't know. I don't think anybody's ever called me a see you next Tuesday besides my own father. That's really amazing. It's so bad that at one point on the drive home, we were on a bridge and I was just like, if you don't stop now, I will literally drive this car off the bridge. Like I remember having this moment of seeing red and not being able to handle it and being confined in a car with him. I didn't understand like how to make it stop. And so, I mean, side note, for all of those people who experience something so horrible and go red and go blinded by like what they actually do, the actions that they take, I get it. That was my first taste of really understanding that humans can do anything and it could be the most vile things you can think of if backed into a corner and not even understand it. So it was one of those times when I had to realize and what was happening in my body? What was I experiencing? What was I feeling to try to see if I can ensure that I can get myself support and help before that, right? But up until that point, like there was no coaching about it. There was no anything. I hadn't had any therapy before. In fact, it was kind of still like kind of a taboo thing. And so I didn't have anywhere to go to. So after the weekend's all over and I go back to school, I'm sitting around a table with some of my friends and some of their friends, and I'm talking about the situation. And I just mentioned that he had hit my friend's car in the parking lot. And I was just like, oh, I'm just like so upset. And I'm like, you know, it's just too much. I can't handle it. And I remember at one point I just said, sometimes I just wish he would die. And the minute that left my mouth, I watched like my friends of friends look at one of my really good friends to see if she was okay. Because in that instant after it left my mouth, I had remembered that her father had passed away when she was younger. And I felt like a complete jerk. I'm the a-hole over here. Like, I can't believe I just did that. And so I paused. I like shut my mouth. And I remember like we all just kind of dispersed from the table. And so I was thinking about it later. And I had gone to her in her room and I went to go apologize because it was just a really wrong thing to say, especially in front of her. And she forgave me. She was very kind. And she said, you know, I recognize that my father and I got into lots of fights and, you know, I don't blame you. And for the longest time, like this was one of those things in my head that I remembered about a time when I was the villain, the time when I was not kind or nice to somebody. And where I really kind of stepped over the line. And it haunted me. Like, I mean, when I was listening to this book and talking about trauma and thinking about it, I like vividly could picture the situation unfolding in my head. And then all of a sudden, I had this realization. I realized that they all thought I must have been some sort of entitled, you know, little girl who was just so embarrassed because her dad tapped the car in front of her. They had no clue that he was a raging alcoholic. Up until that point, I had had 19 years of mostly verbal abuse, but every once in a while, physical abuse, that I had seen it happen to my family members. Just the trauma I've witnessed over the years of what that was entailing. And I realized nobody said anything to that girl at the table. Nobody said, is she okay? Are you okay? Do you need some help? Like, what's going on with your life? Like, nobody questioned that. And it really made me think. And I'm like, gosh, why? I'm kind of lying to myself. Like, no, it wasn't a nice thing to say in front of her. But at the same time, I'm looking, you know, now this older, wiser version of me, right? 38. So what am I, like 20 years out from that experience? I'm looking down at myself and I'm realizing that little girl needed so much support. She thought she was an adult and she's had to be an adult so long in her life, much, much longer than most kiddos. And she needed a hug and she needed a safe place to weep and to cry and to be angry and to punch some pillows and to understand and learn about boundaries and figure out how to manage this relationship. And oh my gosh, there's so many things. And I remember early on in my grief journey after losing Lincoln, I remember pulling up all these little scenarios just like that, where I was the villain, where I was the bad guy, where I was the jerk for, you know, trying to use as light terms as I possibly can to keep this clean, you know. But I was definitely calling myself worse things in my head, you know, and that's what I was used to. That was the treatment I expected because that's what I was raised with. And I remember at one point thinking, is it the culmination of all the times that I have been the villain that has led to my loss of my son, Lincoln? I remember thinking that it was like, not an eye for an eye, but like, I've done so much that I haven't learned from or that I haven't grown from that maybe I didn't deserve to keep this amazing, you know, ball of love and light. And it really weighed on me. It weighed on me. Like, if I was a better person, would he still be here? And I feel like with the few other parents, bereaved moms that I have met and I've talked to, that's a really common feeling. This feeling of like, I didn't deserve to keep my child. I wasn't a good enough mom. I am not a good enough person. I could have done something differently. And all of these questions are coming up into my head. And I realized, gosh, these are the lies that we tell ourselves. And it's deeply rooted in guilt and in shame. And I only know that because of Brené Brown. Thank you so much for the vocabulary there to help be able to just explain that. But, you know, it's from the fact that, you know, one Christmas, he was invited to my aunt's house. It was the last time we ever saw him at Christmas. And before I got there, he knew I didn't like smoking in the house because I have asthma, probably because of the secondhand smoke in the house growing up. And he smoked a gazillion cigarettes in this house before I got there. So that by the time I walked into the room, I could not breathe. And like then proceeded to call me a whole bunch of names and everything. And I remember being so mad at my mom. And I've talked to her about this a lot. I was so mad at my mom. Like, how could you invite him? And she's just like, well, he's your father. He is allowed to have access to you. Like, it's the holidays. Like, she's, you know, in her head justifying it because she's trying to do the best she can with what she had. Although I was very upset about that at the time. And I remembered walking into my aunt's house and my aunt being like, whoa, you can't be like that to your mom. Like, this is Christmas. Like, don't ruin Christmas and all that. And, you know, my aunt had no idea what was going on in our lives. She had no idea the extent of how awful of an experience we had with my father. She had no idea. Otherwise, she wouldn't have ever said that to me. But at the time, you know, I don't have enough. I'm not removed from the situation enough to understand that. I don't I can't comprehend that. I had nobody to talk to. And it was just like, I felt like every avenue, every time I would burst out and make a big deal about the stuff that has been happening to me, I was, you know, told how I was wrong or how I was being a jerk or how I was going to ruin something. And I think it just normalized a lot of it. And that's where sitting in my therapist's office and telling her, like, when she's just like, wow, that's trauma and this is trauma. And oh, you know, having to call 911 because your dad is holding your mom up by her neck and you're trying to get him to stop. Like, that's trauma. Like, your mom picking up a knife to try to protect herself from him and calling your name so that there's a witness. Yeah, that's trauma. Throwing his clothes out onto the front, you know, that's trauma. You know, watching him get so drunk that he peed all over the house and my mom had to call the rug cleaners and blame it on the cat, you know, the next day. Like, I'm airing some dirty laundry here, but you know, nobody understood the extent. And that's just a couple of things. I mean, I was hit before because I took too long at a mailbox. I got hit because I asked for a dollar to go buy another word search game book at the local bookshop when I was like, 12 or something. And my cousin saw that happen. My dad didn't see that my cousin saw, but my cousin saw that happen. I don't know if she remembers that, but I remember her seeing me get hit for that. And like I said, all of those experiences felt like they were just so normalized, and that I was told that people have it worse. There are starving kids in Africa, you know, when you don't finish your plate of food in front of you at a dinner table or whatever, you know, or I would be picked on for, you know, what I chose and not chose to eat. And oh my goodness, there was a lot. Anyway, I was thinking to myself how we normalize all these things and how this is the generational trauma that we've experienced. Like, the few stories I hear about my mom and growing up, they didn't have enough food. Her father was a very awful person. You know, how is she going to understand the love that she deserves from the masculine energy when her father was a terrible person? And then she meets my dad, who was maybe slightly better than that. I mean, slightly. I mean, I'm talking like we're splitting hairs here. And thinking that's the love that you deserve. I truly believe that people end up going after the love they think they deserve. And so it just made me realize that nobody's had a way to talk about this. Like, there's been therapy, sure, but again, it's been stigmatized. And I'm glad that I feel like my generation, millennials, have gotten more exposure to say it's okay to talk about, and it's okay to seek help for, and it's okay if you need a little bit of a help, you know, with medication to be able to cope throughout the day, right? I mean, in this book too, The Body Keeps Score, and I'll put it in the link in the resources, you know, they talk about how SSRIs and things like that really came out and were developed, like Zoloft and Prozac and things like that, for World War I and II veterans who would come home with PTSD before it was called PTSD. And they had so many things happen that they could not function in their daily lives, that the medication was designed to be able to allow them to just kind of like reintegrate with life again. Now, that can cover up a multitude of sins, and you can think that you're okay, and that's not the case. Like, you still need to unpack and peel back the layers of trauma, like an onion in your life, and kind of make some peace with it. But it's hard to do, and it requires like professional help with that. That's not something, by the way, a coach can do for you. That's really a therapist. That's the line there. A coach can acknowledge the trauma from the past and figure out how do you want to move forward. A therapist is really going to help you unpack it and find a way to incorporate that part of you, that shadow of you, into yourself to work toward making you whole, if that makes any sense, or at least that's my understanding of it. That was the first time in therapy, like listening to her kind of talk to me about that. She very rarely gave me any advice, but telling me and helping me understand that that is trauma, regardless of whether I thought it was or not, was a huge eye opener. And the fact that you're allowed to be angry at your parents, and that's okay. You know, I thought that if we loved each other, we're not allowed to be angry, and you're allowed to be angry. Boy, did that serve me well in relation, well, it would have served me well if I learned that earlier on in relationships than I did now. But, you know, I now use that advice in the fact that, like, I sometimes will go to bed angry. It's okay if I'm angry with my husband to go to bed. In fact, I find that it's a really good coping mechanism, because half the time, if I feel like it's not going to end up with a productive conversation, I'm like, you know what? Let's take a time out. Let's pause right here. I'm going to go to bed and I'm going to see if this is still a problem in the morning. And 9 times out of 10, it's not. Or if it is, I now have some sleep under my belt and I can talk somewhat intelligently about it. But now I've really gone off on some tangents, but I wanted to just kind of talk about some of the lies that we tell ourselves around the loss of our children. For the longest time, I felt like it was my fault. I could have done something different. If I didn't go on the trip, I would have seen his symptoms get worse, because I was the one that saw them in the first place. That's the whole, like, the what if cycle that we go down, right? So it's the my fault. And for the longest time, I remember thinking to myself, it was a really bad dream and I just need to wake up from this. Like, I just need to wake up and it will be okay again. And I mean, that's definitely a lie. That it was my reality. I'm not allowed to be happy again. There's a thought there too, that being happy feels wrong. And so many people want to tell you, like, oh, he would want you to be happy. And that just feels like such crap. Oh my goodness. That's on the bingo card of things not to tell a bereaved person. like, yes, but they need to come to that at their own rate and pace and in their own time, not right after. There's this lie we tell ourselves that we should be over it by now, that, like, there's this timeline, like, oh, a year, like, after a year, like, you really should, you know, not be in mourning anymore. And, like, I mean, I talk about how the year mark is where I hit my year of anger. There's this lie about, like, I should have known this is going to happen. The good things can't happen to me. Like, I was stupid for thinking that a miracle could save us and to keep us through. And I understand that lie absolutely as well. There's this thought around, I can't talk about my child. I remember right after Lincoln died, I thought to myself, I don't want this to be my story. I don't want people to look at me and be like, oh, that's the woman that lost her child. Like, I didn't want the pity. And pity is very different than empathy. And pity and sympathy, I think, are kind of gross. I still have a hard time with them. But it's not been until later, until I've realized that my story is actually really powerful. And what I've learned is really powerful. And in talking to some of you, and I'm so thankful that when you send me an email and send Lincoln the email, just to let me know what's resonated with you, that it makes me feel like this is for something. It's not just me talking into, you know, the empty ether. A lot of the times we tell ourselves that we have to be strong for others. I know so many moms who, when they've lost a kiddo and they've had other kids, they felt like they've had to be really strong for their kids. They're not allowed to cry in front of them. They're not allowed to do anything like that. Like, if they're not strong, who's going to be strong? I don't have an answer, by the way, for that, but I do think that's a lie that we tell ourselves. I think at some point you can't be. You need to be able to let things out, and suppressing it isn't going to be helpful. But I can't tell you what that should look like or who should help you with that. And then for a long time, I felt like I shouldn't burden others with my grief. Now, I don't feel that way as much as I know of other parents who feel that way. I look for opportunities to talk about him. And if I'm going to be talking to somebody more than once, like more than a grocery store interaction, I tend to talk about him, because to me, it's an elephant in the room until I get to talk to him or say something about him, because I've got 3 children and I'm mad that the world only gets to see 2 of them. Because all 3 of them have been really amazing. And so I just wanted to take today's episode, and I'm going to start making these slightly shorter in format to hopefully make them a little bit more digestible. So let me know if you like that concept moving forward. But I'm not going to go into all the different things and all the different lies, but I hope you don't see yourself in some of these, but I'm unfortunately believing that you probably do. And even if you're not a bereaved parent, but somebody going through grief, I'm sure you're going to be telling yourself some of these lies about being strong and not talking about what happened to you because it's too painful, or that you should have known it should have happened because you can't have anything nice happen to you, or it can't be good, right? Or that it's your fault for whatever it is that you're going through. And I'm hoping that this episode serves as an opportunity to and maybe ask yourself what lies you're telling yourself. And I don't think we'll have a right answer, or what should we be thinking? I don't like that word should, but I'm really interested in hearing some of the lies you've been telling yourself. Because I can almost guarantee that if I haven't shared them here, I probably have an experience in that too. And I think recognizing that can go a really long way. So thank you for listening, and I look forward to sharing my next thoughts. And thank you, Lincoln, until we meet again.